Selhurst Park holds its breath to find out whether this goal counts or not. The goal is good! And Crystal Palace are surely going to beat the champions!
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellon.
Hello.
No Jan this week. He's got a bit of top of the table vertigo, I think. I think that was the diagnosis. Because, Terry, should we have a look at the top five in the Premier League?
Oh, I don't know why. What possible relevance could that have on proceedings?
Obviously, the champions, Liverpool, are still there, despite losing at the weekend. You may not have heard this, Terry, but they lost at the weekend. Maybe I'll have a chance to bring you up to speed on that game if you missed it. And Tottenham managed to squeeze into the top five. They're in fourth at the moment. They got a jammy draw against a really unlucky Wolves side. But who makes up the rest of the top five there, Terry? Have you got that at hand there?
That would be Jan Bilton's Sunderland.
Sunderland, yes, in fifth place. And then in third place, who's there?
Well, that will be Terry DeFellon's Crystal Palace. And were it not for a last-gasp winner at the end of the Newcastle versus Arsenal game, they would be second.
They would be second.
But there was a last-gasp winner.
There was a last-gasp winner. A fully deserved last-gasp winner. In a dramatic weekend, wasn't it? There was lots of narrative going around, wasn't there, this weekend? People were referring to this game week at the end of September as a pivot point of the season where there was a sea change of opinion about where the title was going. Apparently, Arsenal are now the favourites. This was before they played Newcastle. They were lodged as favourite among the bookmakers to win the title. And all because Liverpool lost at Selhurst Park. Now, I don't know if you caught the game, Terry. Did you catch the game?
I may have picked it up on the radio at some point. Actually, to be fair, I listened to it on Radio 5 Live because I don't do illegal streaming because I don't know how to. So I listened to it on the radio and then caught the highlights on Match of the Day. And goodness me, what a ride, Graham. What a ride.
What a ride. From the people who I know who did watch it, Palace were not only good for that win, they should have gone in at half-time about 3-0 up. So I understand as well.
No, absolutely. I was following the game along on FootMob, which is my live score app of choice, and looking at the XG and thinking, bloody hell. And indeed, the five live commentators using their eyes going, really, Palace could conceivably have been 5-0 up, but certainly 3 or 4 in that first half. Certainly from Liverpool's reaction, certainly was, well, Arne Slot, who is generally speaking a fairly fair-minded man, or at least he is at the moment because he wins more games than he loses. He certainly took the view that Palace were the better team and deserved to win the game. Well, sorry, I think what he exactly said was that if anyone deserved to win that match, it was Crystal Palace, he's getting used to being quite conciliatory and sort of like, you know, magnanimous in defeat, isn't he? is honest, lots of Crystal Palace. I can get used to it too.
So are Palace Liverpool's bogey side? Do you want to play them every week?
Well, I mean, if it's going to end the way that it does, yes, but only if we can go to penalties as well. That might be something that we would like. No, I would not want to play Liverpool every week. They're a very, very good side. But I'll tell you something, Graham, yeah. And I know hopefully we will dwell on Palace's success as it is so far a little bit longer, but I can see why Arsenal are the favourites, because Liverpool, they do like to concede a goal.
Mm.
You know, they are pretty porous. And also, I think people are looking at the amount of times that they're pulling last-minute winners / equalizers out of the bag, and then coupled that with the amount of goals that they score, and you do have to ask yourself, is this a sustainable season-long solution? I mean, can they keep that going for the entirety of the season? Will they be able to vibe their way for an entire season? I mean, like, this isn't England in the Euros, you know, this is a full-length season. I think that'd be a little bit more solid than that if they really want to win the league. So you can see why Arsenal, who I think are a lot more solid defensively, a lot more tactically disciplined, and are also themselves capable of some drama when required, that you can see why they would be installed as the favourites even before what happened at the weekend.
What you're saying about Liverpool's somewhat porous defence or frailties in defence for periods of the game, I think we saw that even last week when they won the Merseyside derby, but they were 2-0 up, conceded, and it wouldn't have surprised anyone if they conceded again. Let another 2 goals lead slip like they've done 3 times, I think, already this season. So I think that's why people are looking at them thinking that there is, I think your analysis is right, they're vibing their way at the top of the table. When they were 5 wins from 5, it's very difficult to argue with the way that they're doing things. But of course, when they play Palace, who have now got a unbeaten streak now of, what is it, 18, 19 games now?
Yeah, 18, I think. Yeah.
This is when you start getting found out, I suppose, isn't it? It's all right scoring worldies from 30 yards out to beat Arsenal. It's all right getting winners in injury times, but I'd say they've been playing like every week is a cup final, but we know that Liverpool in cup finals is usually pretty boring, actually. So at least these have been exciting. But yeah, how long can you keep that up? How long can you keep going for? They just need some boring 1-0 wins, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you can see why they were so keen to sign Mark Gahey all the way up to the final knockings of deadline day, because I've no doubt that if he had gone, then if not by now, then very soon Gahey would have brought in some additional solidity. I know that people probably do look at maybe Van Dijk and his age and maybe offer some question marks, but I think the way that Mateta put Konate right through the ringer, didn't he? Especially in that first half, that you do wonder whether or not maybe those guys could use a rest or could use some rotation. And so a third centre-half back would have been, in the short form of Gahey, I think would have been ideal for them. But they haven't got that. And of course, they've lost Giovanni Leone as well due to injury too. In fairness, to what extent he would be playing, I don't know. But I mean, he would have certainly been able to provide some kind of relief. So it's not looking great. I think Liverpool are going to have to try and see if they can sign somebody, either go back in for Gahey if they can get him away from Palace or go elsewhere. So it is a sobering result, I think, for Liverpool fans. And I do wonder whether or not, yeah, this is, of course, the danger when you're doing stuff too early in the season. You know, it's important not to form opinions and not to be too swept away by narrative. It was a great start to the season. But yeah, they've come across a team in Palace who, and I can say without any bias, really, who are probably, well, certainly one of the best teams in the league right now. And yeah, they came unstuck. In fairness, they could easily have drawn that game. I mean, it really did go right down to the wire. Mm. So, but nevertheless, it would have been 2 dropped points at a place where they are comfortable going to and usually win.
Mm. I must say that having only looked at the highlights of Palace, but I've seen Palace a few times over the last few months, this is a really good side. Even without Eze in it, there doesn't seem to be any difference in the way they play. They are very good. They actually remind me a bit of Leicester in 2016.
Mm.
They have that look about them. And if you've got a season where, you know, not all the other big clubs are firing on all cylinders, then I would certainly say that Palace have it in them to be Champions League contenders this season. That unbeaten run, that's real. That's a real achievement when you have a side going that length of time without being beaten, especially when you take into consideration that includes the business end of last season, winning cup finals, and starting a new season after losing one of your best players. But it's obvious now that there are a number of very, very, very good players at Palace now. And being able to hold on to Mark Gahey as well when Liverpool comes knocking. And you think, well, the stars are aligning for Palace, aren't they? When you're talking to your Palace friends, do you hush your tone a bit when you start thinking about how good this team is?
We've not had that conversation. I've had this conversation with people who aren't Palace fans.
Right.
Interestingly, we're having a conversation with some work colleagues today who aren't Crystal Palace fans. The guy who sits next to me is a Liverpool fan and didn't utter a single word of complaint throughout the entire conversation about the result, it should be said. And trust me, this guy, he does complain when Liverpool lose. So, one, he may have been being polite, but I mean, I don't, he's known me long enough to not need to be polite. There was a Leicester comparison. I said that I think that the key components I think you can link back to that Leicester side, and the names that immediately spring to my mind are Kante, Mahrez and yep. Vardy, just off the top of my head. And those guys really elevated that team yep. for one reason or another. I'm not altogether certain that Palace have got that. They don't have a Vardy, certainly. Mateta is a fine player, but he's not as prolific as Vardy was in his pomp. Pino has come in for Eze, and it's only been a couple of games. Yeah, he's a different kind of player to Eze, and he's filling that gap, and it's very encouraging, but I'm not altogether certain that we've quite got that set up. It's nice to think, but I don't think it's completely out of the question that Champions League is off the mark here. A lot of it will depend, something that Leicester didn't have. Palace have got European football, so yeah. they've got Thursday, Sundays to contend with, which is going to be tough for a small squad, and it is a small squad. But, you know, I mean, if they keep that back three going, I mean, Richards, Lacroix and Gehi, and I mean, Lacroix, I can't say enough about Lacroix. I think he's a magnificent player. I can't say enough about the way that Tariq Mitchell has improved under yeah. Glasner as well.
Yeah.
I mean, turning into a proper attacking fullback, he surely must be close to an England call-up, that guy. I mean, he should have been called up by now. I argued back before the Euros that Southgate should have at least had a look at him, given how hard up they were for fullbacks back then. I think Kamada, who I think, if you remember, Graham, I always used to
yep.
like poo my pants every time he got the ball last season. I know Kamada from Frankfurt. He was a good player then, but I mean, he struggled last season to get a rhythm going. He often made costly mistakes, and it was very annoying. But none of that this season. Very, very assured. And of course, Adam Wharton, we all know about. He's going to go for 100 million squillion pounds, I'm sure, at the end of the season. He's an absolutely magnificent footballer if he stays fit. There are options there for Palace, and there's possibilities, but we have to learn the lessons also maybe from Forest last season, who dropped off towards the end, which is really disappointing. It's a long, long, long slog, the league season, and it is a tough league. So it's great right now, and I mean, you're right, it's no fluke. They're unbeaten for a reason. You know, they're incredibly difficult to score against and incredibly dogged and professional, but it's a relatively small squad and a very long season. And I'm not trying to be cute. You know, I genuinely think that it's on after five games to be third after five games. You know, that's enough of the season to think, yeah, this isn't just early season fluctuations in the table. This is, at this point, we're talking about the only unbeaten team in the league.
Yes, we are. And I'm convinced you're not going to finish 12th this season.
13th, Graham. That's what will happen. Well, I mean, the thing is, though, Graham, is that this season is the time to be good because the team's coming up.
Yeah.
Are probably not going, or not, at least not all three of them are likely to be going back down again. Well, again, it's early days, but
they've
all given us cause for optimism. Obviously, Sunderland, but Leeds and Burnley as well. So this is the good time for a middle class club to be playing out of its skin.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to be a club like, say, West Ham at the moment, do you?
Indeed.
Or even Villa. Now, Villa won at the weekend, but you want to have a good start. And Palace have given themselves a good start. And they don't look like they're going to mess that up. Of course, there are things out of your control, like some idiot club who are terrible and get rid of their manager and then drive a truckload of money up to Crystal Palace to try to tempt Oliver Glasner away. He is the top of everyone's shopping list at the moment. If Man United are anything to go by, I think most fans of them think that once Amorim goes, that Glasner will just pack his bags and head up north. He's not that daft, is he?
No, he's not that daft, no. Also, he went to an awful lot of trouble to convince Steve Parish to not sell Gehi. I think it would take some brass neck to then decide to leave himself during the course of the season. And I think that there would be tremendous resistance from the club. But I don't think that he would take that deal. His contract is up at the end of the season. There's no need for him to have an argument like this. Mm. If he wants the Man United job, then they'll have to wait for him. And I would imagine that he won't want to come in. He'll look at what happened with Amorim last season and think, well, that's not happening to me. The other thing is, Oliver Glasner is, let me pretend not to be a Crystal Palace fan. Well, let me put this to you.
Okay.
Do you think Oliver Glasner is probably one of the best coaches in club football right now?
Given what he's doing, what he has done in the last few seasons with the teams he's had, there's not very many that I'd put ahead of him right now.
No. Neither would I. Neither would I. Objectively, and as a Palace fan, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen some crap coaches go through Crystal Palace. I know a good one when I see one, right?
Yeah.
So he, I think, is one of the best managers in club football right now.
Yeah.
And his contract is up at the end of the season. Why would he want to choose Manchester United? I mean, that is a project. It's also a career destroyer. I mean, I can see why he would going to do it. Again, the aforementioned dump truck full of cash, perfectly valid and good reason for a professional coach to take on that job. But there will be other jobs coming up at the end of the season. Where he's in a much, much better position. Now, I suspect that there'll be a job at Stamford Bridge coming up. I mean, I know Chelsea are a really awful football club.
They really are.
That actually Glasner could cope at a really awful football club like that because they've got some really, really good players. And I think that it'll be a, you know, come in for 2-3 seasons and just win us a couple of titles, Ollie, and then you can leave, you know. And I think that Glasner would respond to that kind of challenge. I hate to say it, but I think that that is more likely. I think that Maresca won't see out, well, might see out the season. But I think that the start that Chelsea have had has been disappointing. Oh, yes, Club World Cup. But my feeling is that everyone knows that Glasner's going to be on the market in the summertime unless he signs his contract to Palace. And I really don't think he will.
Yeah.
Because he'd have done it by now.
Yeah.
In which case, then you just wait. So we would be daft to take on a challenge like Manchester United mid-season when the likelihood is it'll just completely destroy his career. He's better off sticking with Palace and seeing through this project, seeing what can be done, try and see if they can win the Conference League, try and see if they can qualify for Europe or, God forbid, even the Champions League, you know, and then leave the club in a much, much better state than what it was and with everyone's best wishes. And I think that that, for him, is the smarter play. You're right, Man United fans, not all Man United fans, some of the Man United fans that listen to this podcast are extremely measured individuals
indeed,
and think these things very, very clearly. But there's a subset of online fans who would just assume that the moment the call is made, when they put out the bat signal, that the world's best coach then comes to it. But I think those days are long over for Manchester United.
Mm.
So I'm not convinced by that narrative at all.
Well, I mean, if we are to go back to the Leicester analogy, I think Glasner is certainly a better coach than Ranieri.
Yeah, yes, I agree with that completely. Yeah, well, maybe Ranieri in his absolute pomp.
Yeah,
but I mean, but Glasner is in his pomp. I mean, he's a 50-year-old man. I mean, these are the golden era for him, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, he should. If I was not a Palace fan, I'd have to say he should leave at the end of the season and manage a Champions League club.
Okay, well, I have got one name of a Premier League manager who might be better than Glasner, Iriola.
Yeah, fair. Fair one.
Given what he's done this season, after the summer they had, what's the upper limit for Bournemouth this season?
Squad depth would be for Bournemouth. Bournemouth's prospects, I think, are probably even better than Palace's because they don't have European football to contend with.
Yeah.
Everything that I've just said about Crystal Palace and Glasner, I could say about Bournemouth and Iriola. I mean, an absolutely fantastic achievement. I realise that there are riders attached to Bournemouth's success. They are a very small club with a lot of money. But goodness me, I mean, with the amount of money that the players that they've lost in the summertime to be able to bring in and apparently not really notice, that is some very, very, very good squad management and very good coaching and good club management. You can't argue with that, really. And it would be it's churlish, really, to suggest that it is kind of bought because they are a tiny football club with a tiny stadium, but you could be critical of that, but at the same time, you could admire the way in which they are managing their resources. That's a very well-run club.
Well, and they did make a hell of a lot of money over the summer.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, this is where I envy clubs like Bournemouth in the way that this has got something that Palace don't have and why I worry about is that Bournemouth seemed to have been much, much clearer about who they got. I think they knew who they were going to sign before they got rid of players. I'm not altogether certain that Palace are quite good at that sort of thing, but they're not as good as Brighton or Bournemouth or Brentford, for example, at that kind of rotation. And I'd like to see Palace do better at that. Bournemouth have been absolutely terrific, and it is a really, really good story. I mean, obviously, at this point, I'm kind of thinking, well, I want Palace to do as well as possible, but were Palace to fall away and, you know, Bournemouth to keep going, I think it would be a tremendous story. And that is not out of the question at all, particularly given that they have got a little bit more time during the middle of the week to be able to prepare for games.
Bournemouth are doing well, but defensively, I mean, they've conceded as many goals as Liverpool. That's how porous they are at the back.
Well, there is that.
There's seven goals that Liverpool have conceded. And to put that in context, that's the same as Palace and Sunderland combined. Wow.
Think about that.
Now, I'm not expecting Sunderland to finish top half this season. And this conversation is easier without Jan here. But hopefully we can flesh this idea out and it'll make him feel better when he's listening to it. But they are doing amazingly well. Of course, fine margins. The game against Forest could have ended up completely different. But they did largely boss that game. Obviously, Ange is still finding his feet at the club. 5 games in, still no win. But Sunderland must be feeling amazing at the moment because of the whole narrative of clubs coming up. Oh, no, they're doomed to go back down again because it's happened for 2 seasons in a row. The narrative is Championship clubs cannot survive in the Premier League. And I think we're seeing this year, actually, they can.
Yeah, I mean, whether they do or not, of course, remains to be seen. But yeah, it's very difficult to imagine Sunderland being relegated even from this point. I mean, I agree with you. There's the possibility that they will, over time, start to tire and maybe suffer from injuries and suspensions that might be a problem for them. But they have got a big squad now, so they have got coverage. So their problems might be is how well they manage rotation, you know, of their players. Those are the kind of challenges that they face. And I've only watched the one game in full. I watched the Forest game, which, you know, yeah, it is a game that could easily have been drawn, and conceivably it's a game that Forest might indeed have won. But at the same time, it's easily a game that Sunderland could have won, and actually they did win. So
yes.
So it's all right. They earned the win. I mean, you know, they completely deserved that win, and they earned it fair and square. And again, you know, this wouldn't be the first time in the world that we've seen close games, particularly this weekend or ever. That's literally how football works, you know. I'm a little bit biased because of my Bundesliga bias, but I think about the signing of Xhaka, you know, I just thought, what a signing that was. I mean, the guy's not even close to being past his best.
No.
He's still in top form. When they signed him, I thought to myself, well, how have they been able to convince that guy to make a move to what everyone else is saying is going to be a club that's going to go straight back down again? So they must know something that we don't.
Yeah.
And he must have known something that we don't. Because it's a big risk. I know going back to the Premier League is a big pull, particularly for Xhaka, because he was at the Premier League before. And I can understand he wanted to get out of the Bundesliga because the Bundesliga is a bit dull. And, you know, the Premier League is glamorous. It's got lots and lots of great players and lots of money as well. But it's a big punt to go to a newly promoted club, especially the one that came up in the playoffs, and especially that was, generally speaking, got promoted, not by a mistake, but really, I mean, we're talking vibes, you know, massive vibes behind Sunderland's playoff campaign. So they must have been able to convince him, said, look, dude, we're going for this, and this is how much money we've spent already, this is how much more money we're going to spend, this is how much we're going to pay you. You know, what do you say? And I think he's probably could end up being the signing of the summer. And of the season, if that's the case. So he's a terrific professional, as you know, Graham, seeing him many, many times.
Oh, certainly, certainly. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he's just slotted straight into that team and he's bossing it there, especially for Sunderland as well, because there was talk of Jordan Henderson going back there as well, wasn't there? And he went to Brentford, and I think that's a great signing for Brentford. And Brentford don't sign players just because they can. Well, that was a measured choice. Well, it always seems to be a measured choice for them whenever they sign anyone. But yeah, I agree. I think that Xhaka signing for Sunderland has been transformative. And I think if there's one thing that keeps them up this season, I think it could be that alone. It is fine margin sometimes between a team that is just missing out on something. You look at the way that Wolves have started this season. I don't think they're bottom of the league because they're awful. I just think that they've just not got into their stride. I mean, they were unlucky not to get a win against Tottenham, but that happens when you're looking for your first win. A game that you think you're in control of, especially against a side like Thomas Frank Spurs side, who can actually pull something out of a pretty desperate situation. But then you have clubs like West Ham, who are just bad. And they finally put Graham Potter out of his misery. Putting Nuno in there, I don't think that's going to save them. I mean, it's great for Nuno. He gets another contract, which he won't see out again. But it's nice to have him there because we like Nuno for some reason. I don't know why we like Nuno. I mean, I think it's nice having a goalkeeper as a manager there, I think.
How is that?
I think we'll still like him even though he's manager of West Ham. But what did you think of that? That was weird timing, wasn't it? A Saturday. Who sacks their manager on a Saturday? I know you're not playing till Monday, but...
It is a strange one, isn't it? Yeah, it was a Saturday morning, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then the players were like, "What's going on?" And the club officials said, "Well, don't worry, someone will be along shortly to manage the team." And they were absolutely right. The timing is really, really odd. I mean, maybe they just wanted to just make certain that they had Nuno in place before doing so, and they just did not want to put Graham Potter in charge for another game. I mean, maybe they just made up their minds. I did actually tip Nuno Espirito sacked again to maybe as a short-term replacement for Amorim at United, which I don't think that would be a terrible fit, to be fair. Because I think he's there, because we talk about vibey coaches. I think Nuno is a fairly vibey guy. And in some clubs it works well, and some clubs it doesn't. I mean, at Tottenham it was a disaster, wasn't it? It was just the wrong guy for that club. I'm not altogether certain that West Ham are just so bloody miserable and bad-tempered. I don't blame them. I mean, I would be miserable and bad-tempered, you know, if I was a West Ham fan. But there just seems to be this fog around the club at the moment. Really, you feel it's not really recovered since that move from Upton Park. It's so difficult to drag yourself away from iconic stadiums. I mean, we won't truly know about Everton until a little bit later on. But it is a tricky thing. It can be done, but it is really hard, particularly like Upton Park. And I don't mean to sound... We're getting vibey here. There are other more technical reasons for it. But really, you know, even under Moyes, where they were actually genuinely, actually totally successful, nobody seemed to be particularly happy with the way that they were playing football. And then Potter, I think it's possibly because he was a Brighton coach, and so I'm being a bit clouded here. But I do wonder he did a serviceable job at Swansea. He was highly rated. He did a decent job at Brighton, but then it didn't take long for De Zerbi to come in and actually make them better.
Yeah.
And it was a disaster at Chelsea. You can give him a pass for Chelsea because Chelsea's one of those clubs. I mean, not everyone responds to
they
that.
They are an awful football club, yeah.
They are a really awful football club. But West Ham just sound like a completely wrong fit for that guy. I mean, I think he needs a project. And he also needs a project where you've not got so much remedial work to do.
Yeah.
I think you've just got to cave out all the gunk at West Ham first before you start filling in with all the good stuff and while still getting results. And at West Ham, and West Ham fans contradict me here, maybe this is an old and tired narrative, but you still feel as though there's an expectation about how you play football at West Ham, which is, in my opinion, completely unworthy of a club like West Ham. And they have a huge history and a storied history. But they've not done enough, I think, to be able to warrant ascribing a certain way of playing football, a West Ham way. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that really is appropriate in a situation. Even Everton fans have ditched themselves of those kind of conceptions about their club. It's just a shit job. It's a fine football club. And I mean, East London and all that. And I'm a Palace fan and a rival London fan. But it's a club worth saving. And we know good people who support West Ham. It's kind of sad to see him in this case. But it's also kind of funny as well, I guess.
Well, yeah, it is. It is. I think as much as anything, they're a side that seems to have lost its identity. And I know you say they don't have that sort of playing the West Ham way. But I think Tottenham fans might say it, but I don't think they actually believe it about their club as well.
Fair.
I think West Ham fans, it's something they're nice to believe in. But I don't think it's the be-all and end-all for them. But I do think that they've lost some of their identity, or they've had a new identity hammered onto their club. The fact they've got London on their badge now.
Oh, please. It's so annoying.
Yeah. I don't think that sits comfortably with West Ham fans either. And they play in the London Stadium. They've got this. So it's all really about this. I mean, you know, it is Brady and Sullivan. They're just basically keeping it covered in glitter to try and sell at a future date.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's not fooling anyone.
No.
Maybe it's fooling the international crowd, but really, I mean, I can't see how anyone's falling for it. And really, they're not what they were. And now, do you accept that because they've given them extended periods in the top flight? Or do you think, well, no, I liked the club as it was. And the whole thing about the move to the Olympic Stadium just didn't feel right. It was just, oh yeah, we're taking an opportunity here. It's like, and not even like when City moved out of Main Road into, well, what is now called the Etihad, into the old Commonwealth Stadium. It felt even more opportunistic than that even. It just, yeah, nothing about it has sat right since they moved in.
No, West Ham United, in a world where football clubs are inherently parochial,
Yeah.
And in a city like London, which is, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, just ridiculously parochial. It is not a united city by any stretch of the imagination. West Ham is the most parochial and the most of itself. You know, I mean, of the top, if you like, Premier League clubs or of the established clubs. Millwall and Charlton fans will have an opinion on this. Palace fans will have an opinion on this. But West, it doesn't get any more East End, does it, really?
No.
I mean, this is the club of the East End.
Yeah.
A few streets in a vast sprawling mass that is East London. And it is a cultural identity that is centuries old. And you move them a couple of streets on and they become something else. And then you have the cheek to rename your stadium the London Stadium and then put London on your badge. I mean, you are ripping the cultural identity away from that football club. And they don't really own it. They've got it on really, really good terms. I mean, they should have stayed at Upton Park and made the best of it. I think one of the best things that happened to Crystal Palace was that we never, ever got tempted to move to sort of like cheap real estate in Purdy Way in Croydon or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have killed the club. And we stayed at Selhurst Park and we're making the best of it. And I think it would have been better if they stayed at Upton Park. I'm sure West Ham fans probably had this conversation with themselves many, many times, but it must be awful to turn up at that ground.
Yeah.
I went to see an Iron Maiden concert there and it was all right. But I was walking around, looking around thinking, Jesus, West Ham fans have to come here every week.
Yes, they do. What do you think is going to happen to Potter now? What do you think he should do?
Well, I think Graham Potter should count his money for a little while and reflect on his career and reflect on the choices that he's made in his career. He will get another job, but I think that he might have to drop down into the Championship. But he just needs to do some due diligence about what it is. I mean, when a Premier League club comes for you mid-season, they're going to be carrying so much baggage with them that you're going to need. They need a lot of convincing for you to take that kind of work. I mean, you maybe even go back to Europe and try and see if he can find a job, in Europe and maybe reboot his career a little bit. He's still got plenty of years left in him, and it would be good to see him succeed because I don't think he's an awful person. I mean, he's worked for some awful football clubs.
He really has.
But I don't know whether or not he really awful football clubs. But I don't think that makes him an awful person.
No. Do you think he could turn up at a middle-class Bundesliga club?
I tell you what.
Yeah.
Mönchengladbach fired their coach a couple of weeks ago. And Eugen Polanski is the caretaker manager. And they lost 6-4 at the weekend.
Yes. That was a mad game, that was.
That was a truly mad. It should be said they were 5-0 down at half-time. So, you know, why not? Get along to Gladbach. I mean, you know, yeah, that's a basket case of a football club. But I think he might suit that Bundesliga vibe. I'd like to see that.
Well, I wonder if there's anything vibey we can pull out the hat this weekend for the listeners' viewing pleasure. Well, on Friday night, it's glitz and glamour all the way because it's Wrexham Birmingham City. Terry, you're going to enjoy writing that one, aren't you?
I am the streamer derby. I'm definitely enjoying watching that. I might sit down and see if I can watch a couple of episodes of whatever hellish documentary those two clubs are responsible for. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's the Hollywood derby. Tom Brady versus that guy who's in those movies and that guy who does those TV shows. Yeah, it's great. But in terms of football, both really interesting football stories. They've put their money where their mouth is, both of those clubs, and they are clearly ambitious. Ere long, we will see them both in the Premier League. I'm sure of it. Probably not this season, but I mean, ere long, I'm sure we will. So, yeah, much to get stuck into there.
Chelsea v Liverpool, both teams looking to bounce back from very, very comical defeats at the weekend. That's going to be an interesting one. That's on Saturday evening. Palace take their unbeaten run to Merseyside as they face Everton. How do you think that one's going to go?
Well, again, we'll see what happens. Palace have got to go to Poland to play Dynamo Kyiv in their first ever European game. So that could be a difficult one. So that's going to be it. And it's the Hilly Dick is turning into a bit of a fortress. So could be tough. We'll be looking to hold on to a 0-0 draw there, I reckon. I will be previewing it, but I don't know if it's going to be a particularly good game or an interesting game. But at this point, it's to see how long Palace can keep the run going, I suppose, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's going to be good because it's going to be the last game before an international break as well.
Another international break?
Don't worry, Terry. Next season, it'll all be different, won't it? And then we've got something else to complain about.
Yes, yeah, a longer international break.
Well, if you want to see what we think of all seven games that we think you should watch to take you from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set. And that will take you along to Substack, where you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Or you can just read it on the blog every week. It's right there on sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for our blogs and it's all there. All of them are there. Going back forever, for like ever, all the way in the past, there's 300 odd of weekend box sets. And before that, there was the midweek and weekend TV previews that we used to do. They stretch back to 2008, I think, even before we started working with Chris. That's how far back they go.
Oh, yeah, they do, didn't they? I forgot about that. Yeah. We actually started that off on the Onion Bag or something.
The Tactics Truck. Yeah.
The Tactics Truck. Yeah, we started them on the Tactics Truck, but then when the Tactics Truck merged into Some People Are on the Pitch, we did that as well, with the lovely Chris Oakley, who was one of West Ham's finest citizens, should be said.
It really is. He really is. Yeah. You'd be doing it for this long. You'd think we'd be good at it by now, wouldn't you? Our TV previews, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, we just don't learn, Graham.
We never do.
Otherwise, we wouldn't bother, would we? We would stop. Yeah, bunch of guys going to kick the ball around. Goals will be scored, possibly, or not.
We're going to take next week off, give Jan a bit extra time to recover, but we'll be back in 2 weeks' time after the international break. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry DeFellon, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us, and review us. Do it now!
That's some Trustpilot review you've just laid on.
And the cosmic scheme of things, it's very much just slightly above average, but that slightly above average is fine for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It still gets 5 stars. It's just, you know, just as the reviews go, it's a little underwhelming. But
hey, you want overwhelming reviews? Go somewhere popular.